All right, so let's let me do a little bit of instructions, and then we'll just sit a little bit in silence. So it's kind of weird. I'm so used to hearing so much sound when I'm in the hall. It's very different. I'm so used to hearing so much sound, but here where I'm at Spirit Rock, it's so quiet. In the teacher village. But I can imagine the sound that I would hear when I'm in the hall. And just have a sense of noticing that sound. Noticing the sound wherever you're at. It's still sound. Your ears can pick up silence. They still hear it as sound. And then maybe as you notice the sound and come into this present moment, you can notice how the body feels sitting or whatever posture you're in. You can feel your sit bones. And you can feel your thighs and maybe your feet on the ground, the floor, legs on the floor, cushion, back maybe resting up against some furniture or not. Just kind of feel the body sitting here. You're actually practicing when you just turn your ears towards hearing, noticing sounds, and turn your awareness towards the sensations in the body. This is what meditation is. It's really just the steadying our attention on the present moment, noticing what's actually here. You might notice the body breathing. Sometimes it's hard to notice the body breathing. There's no requirement to notice the body breathing. Noticing the body sitting is no difference. Noticing the ears hearing, there's no difference. Noticing the mind thinking, no difference. We just want to cultivate an ability to know the present moment and what's happening rather than being lost in thinking, or lost in sound, judging, comparing, or lost in the body, comparing, judging how the body feels. We just want to know the body sitting, feel the sensation of that, know the ears are hearing sounds and silence, know the mind is thinking. We don't care what it's thinking about. We just know it's thinking. Then as we sit here in silence, you might begin to notice the mind wanders away from this present moment, even though it really feels nice to just be present, not worried about anything. The mind will still wander away from it. Get bored with it, not see the importance of it. And if you notice the mind has wandered away and you're lost in some story, when you notice that, just do your practice, return again. And this returning again and again and again to the present moment is stabilizing the mind. We don't have to have a mind that's stable all the time. We just have to have a mind that knows how to find stability. And that comes from returning it again and again and again to the present moment. We're actually teaching the mind how to find stability. All right. We're actually going to talk about my favorite subject. Well, my favorite subject in Dhamma is really dukkha, because it's so awakening if you start connecting with dukkha. The more you are willing to take a chance in a moment when there's some difficulty, or take a chance on something you're not sure of, the freer your mind becomes. We are so habituated that oftentimes we don't even take a chance on the possibility that there is a way for liberation. We end up staying tightly wound in our same patterns over and over and over and over, constantly wanting a different result, but never willing to sort of trust a different way is possible if we stay with the difficulty. It's such a strange thing. So dukkha has been my it's just been my go-to energy. Not just the dukkha that comes when I have something going wrong, but the dukkha that comes when something's going great and I find myself worrying about or getting all caught up in, how do I keep this? And I need to really just let it be. Let it go if it goes. And trust that whatever, it's there's some kind of trust in that I have in life now. I didn't always have. I was always very much a controlling person. So in order for dukkha, in order for me to love dukkha, I have to have a degree of faith, a strong degree of faith. And so faith that we're going to talk about tonight is my second favorite subject in the Dhamma. And so I want to talk a little bit about this thing called faith. It is, and I want to read two suttas, talk about two suttas, the Buddha's discourses, or you can think of it as a Buddha's Dhamma talk, and different ways that he talked about faith. Or I guess I could say it's more that I want to show you two different ways of looking at faith, because he wasn't really talking about faith in neither one of them, but they are reminding me of what faith is. So faith is this this quality that you have in order to begin to have a different relationship with dukkha. Otherwise, we just keep having the same old relationship with dukkha over and over and over and over. And we don't really see anything different. We just have a one way of looking at everything. But in order to be in this transcendental type this year that we're going to spend in this transcendental kind of practice, where we're going to be trying to look outside of our habit patterns and inside into the dukkha itself, or into the moment itself. You could think of transcendental as not transcending out of our bodies or our lives or our experiences. It's transcending out of our minds into the direct experience, into this intimacy with the way things are right now. And having this ability to do that takes faith. And faith is not something that just naturally, it grows as we grow in our practice. So let me first read this sutta to you. I don't know if I've ever read it. I don't know if I've ever read it, but I just thought about it. So I want to read this one sutta just to get us started. I love it. All right, it's called Kamada's Lament. And this is Andrew Olinsky's his interpretation of this, translation of it. But this is one way of thinking about faith. So Kamada is this deva. And I love suttas, you know, about devas because devas supposedly have everything going for them, and yet they go to the Buddha with practice questions just like we do. So Kamada goes to the Buddha and he says, "So hard it is to do, sir. So very hard to do." And the Buddha responds and says, "But still, they do what's hard to do, who steady themselves with virtue. For one pursuing, and let's just say, practice or mindfulness, contentment arises, and with it, joy. So hard it is to get, sir, this contentment of which you speak." And the Buddha says, "But still, they get what's hard to get, who delight in a tranquil mind, the mind of those both day and night, delights in its development. So hard it is to tame, sir, this mind of which you speak." The Buddha says, "But still, they tame what's hard to tame, who delight in senses at peace, cutting through mortality's net, the nobles, Kamada, proceed. So hard it is to go, sir, on this path that gets so rough. Still, Buddha says, nobles, Kamada, proceed. On paths both rough and hard to take, those who are less than noble fall on their heads when the path gets rough. But for the nobles, the path is smooth. For nobles, smooth out what is rough." I so love that sutta. I love it, love it, love it. And I think the reason why I love it is because of this whining, complaining nature of Kamada. He is complaining about the path and the difficulties that come up in the path. But the Buddha does not have that same kind of, he's almost not even mad at Kamada for the complaining. The commentaries that says this says that Kamada, I mean the Buddha, has this gentle, compassionate, but continuous movement towards cultivating practice, even though Kamada is struggling with it. And this is what I think faith is. So faith is not like, this is one way I think of faith. It's not like, "Oh yeah, I got it. I got it. No problem. I'm not scared of nothing. I'm charging right in there and I'm gonna do it." That may be some courage and it might even be a little crazy, but faith is this persistent aiming and sustaining and persistent efforting, moving. It's actually this, not that your path is smooth, but that you, as a noble practitioner, your path becomes smooth out of its roughness. So the Buddha is almost acknowledging this is a hard path. It's both hard, it's difficult, it's hard to get, it's hard to tame the mind. It's this acknowledgement that it's all hard. Yes, it is a hard path, especially in times like this. It's a hard path even to think about trying to steady the mind when it seems like everything about us is in chaos and unsteady. And yet, this kind of persistent movement towards steadying the mind turns a rough path into a smooth one. And it ultimately supports this greater peace and tranquility. So the faith that we're looking for is not a faith that just charges ahead without any kind of wisdom or maturity. It is something that is based in this kind of persistent sincerity that keeps us connected to the practice through whatever. And so we're using whatever is showing up as the gift to have us keep going. This is what practice meant to me. Over the years, I just grew in love with the practice more and more and more. And I can remember going to Seattle Insight. There are people on this call and in the hall that, we were all going to Seattle Insight at the same time with Rodney. And I swear sometimes the devas would be swimming around up in the ceilings listening to some of Rodney's Dhamma talks, and my heart would just open up. Somebody online mentioned that they on the Zoom during the break mentioned that they, same thing. Just we used to listen to Rodney and have these moments when we felt like our, the inspiration of it was enough to keep us going. This is what I think Buddha was doing for Kamada, inspiring him to keep going, acknowledging, yes, it's hard. Yes, it's hard. Yes, it's hard. But keep going, keep going, keep going. And that eventually you will take that rough, hard path and you will smooth it into something, you will turn it into something smooth. The thing that is awkward is that we're having our faith show up in this world where it doesn't seem like it's working. So I had so much anxiety. Oh, Jesus, I had so much anxiety. I know you know this. And at the same time, I would have I would read these stories and have these moments of thinking about all these enlightened beings and beings that just became enlightened just by being around the Buddha. And so there would be this contrast between the difficulties I was facing and this possibility that I could get past it, that somehow I could transcend this difficulties. And I didn't quite understand how to do it at all. I was so, like I said, controlling, and all that controlling was me thinking, this is the only way I know how to be safe, is to make sure I have everything set up just the way I think it ought to be. So I want to give you another sutta with a different take on the way that the Buddha talks about faith, or how I see faith. It's this sutta where this deva comes to the Buddha late at night. I think I've told you guys this before. I know we used it maybe even in last year's year-long, but this is such a faith-driven kind of sutta where this woman comes, this deva comes to the Buddha to ask him, how did he cross the floods? And the floods are this notion, we all get in it, where we get taken away, whisked away by some reactivity, some sense of who we are, some sense of what the world is. We just get swept away by these ideas and understandings and patterns and conditionalities about the way we think everything is. And we get so swept away in it, we cannot see any other way than what we always do. We just keep using our same habits, trying to make our way out of it. But we can tell that this is not working. And so this deva goes to the Buddha to say, you know, how did you do it? How did you get out of the floods? And I don't want to go through the whole thing of it again, but basically the way she approaches the Buddha is not with very much reverence or respect. She basically approaches him like, I'm on the same level as you. So what did you do? Tell me. I'll take that information and I'll go and I'll fix myself. And so the Buddha's response to her, she asked him, how did you cross the floods? And his response was, I crossed the floods without standing still, moving forward without standing still. And he's very abrupt with it. And I think the reality hit her that I need more information. Can we stop for a minute and can you help me just a little bit further? So she asked him, but how did you do that? In this kind of recognition that it's not just give me some information and I can figure out how to apply it. It's how did you do that? How did you apply this in such a way that you freed yourself from these floods that whisk us away, that it doesn't even seem like we can get away from it? So then the Buddha tells her that he crossed the floods by not standing, by not moving forward, because when he moved forward, he got entangled. And without standing still, because when he stood still, he sank. And so what he kind of helped her see is, you got to apply, you got to be in the moment, be gentle, and begin to not push to get your way, but not just do nothing. You got to actually learn how to move with the experience. And this is what I think faith is about, learning how to move with our experiences. There are so many things coming at us, so many things we don't like, so many things we like and want to hold on to, so much fear, so much hatred, all of it is all coming at us. And if we just get reactive and try to just, you know, control everything like me, you end up just with the same stuff you've always had. Nothing ever changes. And in this practice, I think all of us come to a place where we're like, how do I do this? Now, it's not a kind of give me the information and I'll go. It's not a philosophy. There's something that is calling us to give ourselves to. So in Sharon's book, Faith, which if you have not read that book, I highly recommend you read that book, because faith in Dhamma is different than the kind of faith many of us were raised with, which is tell me the information, I'll believe it, and somehow or another, it's going to help me. And we just believe what we're taught. This is not what faith is. Faith, this is not the faith of Dhamma. It's not, do you believe in the Dhamma? You can believe in it all day long, and it's not going to change anything. The faith is this, like a seed, it's called. It's sada. It's called like a seed. The Pali word of it is to place your heart upon. It's like you care about this moment. You get intimate with this moment. You don't just try to apply the usual kinds of ways we deal with things, but there is a quality of caring about, of setting an intention to be with this moment and cultivate an understanding. How did it come to be? How is it that this moment is the way it is? And it takes a degree of faith to soften around moments, soften around anything. We're such a fix-it kind of people, culture. I mean, everything about our culture tells us how to fix things, how to fix it. We got the thing that's going to fix it. And so this faith, what the Buddha was telling this Deva, is that you can't fix it. You can't just charge in there and fix it, because you're just going to get entangled and reactive. You can't just do nothing. Okay, fine. I don't, it's not about me. I'm not doing nothing. You can't do that either, because you're just going to sink. You have to have this soft, gentle kind of caring energy where you place your heart upon it, the moment, the experience, the situation, the thought, the sensation, whatever it is, you place your heart upon it. You have this sense of care and interest to kind of trust that you can move through this in a new way. So then I want to give you one more different way of seeing this. Because you can't just look at faith like I said, like this believing in something. We need something different. So the Buddha gave this sutta one time, and he said, let me just read a little bit of it. He said, I tell you, practitioners, I'm going to say practitioners instead of monks, because it's like he's talking to us. It is for one who knows and sees that there is the end of the affluence or our defilements or our, bad habits. For one who knows what and sees what is there, the ending of the affluence. For one who knows what and sees what is there, the end of the affluence. And he's saying that basically you have to see its arising, its passing away, and its feeling, perception, all of this as you begin to see what's happening in the present moment. It is in this way that there is the ending of the affluence. So if you take what he was saying to the Deva about crossing the floods, you're gently trying to see in a moment how you're relating to that moment. Can you see? And can you steady yourself? And to Kamada, he's saying, can you just soften around this and begin to gradually trust that over time you will smooth this out? And so here he says, even though this wish may occur to a practitioner who dwells without devoting themselves to the development of mind, oh, that my mind might be released from defilements, bad habits, affluence, through lack of clinging. Still, their mind is not released from the affluence through lack of clinging. And why is that? From lack of developing. It should be said that the mind will not be released. So there's a way in which, if you don't develop your mind, no amount of pleading or wanting or wishing is going to help us release this. He said, suppose a hen had 8 or 10 or 12 eggs. If they don't cover them rightly, warm them rightly, incubate them rightly, then even though this wish may occur to them, oh, that my chicks might break through the eggshells with their spiked claws and beaks and hatch out safely. Still, it's not possible that the chicks will break through. Why? Because the hen has not covered them rightly, warmed them rightly, and incubated them rightly. So then he goes on and says, even though this wish may occur to a practitioner who dwells, even though this wish may not occur to a practitioner who dwells themselves in development, oh, that my mind might be released. So you don't even think about your mind being released. Still, their mind is released from the affluence through the act of lack of clinging. And he goes back to the hen and says that this hen, same thing. Even if she doesn't even think about her eggs breaking through, her chicks breaking through, if she sits on them correctly, warms them rightly, and incubates them rightly, the chicks will break through. So in a way, this is another way of thinking about faith. He used one last example that just as when a carpenter's apprentice sees the marks of his fingers or thumb on the handle of his axe, he does not know, today my axe handle wore down this much, yesterday it wore down that much, and the day before yesterday it wore down this much. Still, he knows it is worn through when it is worn through. And in the same way, when you practice, just the practice alone begins to cultivate a development. And that's what we're doing here. We are cultivating a steady mind that is not steady because we're somehow trying to get in a blissful state and stay there. It's steady so that we can see how things come to be. We can begin to see how it is that we can cross the floods. We begin to see how it is that this dukkha arises and this dukkha passes away. We begin to see how this skillful means rises and how that skillful means passes away. We begin to see the practice and understand how to make smooth whatever that rough road is, or whatever that rough situation is, we begin to see how to make it smooth. This is what faith does. It is not just believing in something. It's both this persistent willingness to keep practicing, even through difficulties, even when it doesn't even seem like your practice is working. It's this kind softening towards the present moment and trying not to push and get your way. And it's trusting in the present moment and softening into it. And then it is this knowledge that as you begin to develop your mind, the cultivation of liberation is happening. Whether you see it happening in this moment or not, it's happening over time. Let me see if there's anything else. I see what time it is. Yeah, I think I'm going to stop here. What I wanted to give you some time to cultivate and think about is, and I want you to share, is what inspires you about practice. What inspires you to, you may have only been on the, I've only been meditating 2 months, but what inspires you to stay for 2 months? Because if you've only been practicing for 2 months, you done had some hell of a meditation sits. And just the sit tonight for 40, 35 minutes, that's a hard sit if you've only been practicing for 2 months, but yet you stay. So what is that? What is it about the practice that inspires you to continue with it, regardless of the circumstances that show up. That's what I want us to talk about a little bit. And just share what inspires you in this practice to stay. Doesn't have to be grand. Could just be, I like the Dhamma talks. Me too. I like them too. So whatever it is, just want to bring that out. Great. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope your conversations were fruitful. Let's just see if we can open it up and see if anybody has anything they'd like to share. It could be a question or a comment, or you can just share what inspires you to stay in the Dhamma.
Hey, Jeremy, he, they. While we were talking about this, you know, notion of faith and all the qualities that come with that feeling, I realized that it sounds in many ways a lot like attachment to me. Definitely the...
Uh-oh, you cut off. I can't hear you. I don't hear you guys.
Oh, okay, there you go. Definitely the like bad type of faith you discussed definitely seems like attachment, because it's sort of this like desperate, solid, like belief in something that just like must be true or else. But I was trying to figure out how you prevent even this type of faith from becoming this something that you're like desperate to see that something is possible, and how does that not create suffering in and of itself?
Oh, yeah, good question there. You're so right. That's what our difficulty is with habits. We get attached to them, and we try to grab a hold of that. And you can exactly have the same problem with faith. But the way that you keep it from becoming some kind of an attachment is that you keep it in a much more softer held container, and you're applying it to the present moment. So no two moments are the same. Just like stepping into a river, you never step in the same river twice. So it's the moment itself is where your faith is applied. It's not applied based on what you think. It's applied based on what you're experiencing. So this is why I use the Deva Sutta, where the Buddha's saying you have to have this kind of don't push forward and don't stand still. You have to move with the moment as it is. And with Kamada, if you try to square it up where this is the only thing that applies, it won't work either. Because that's what Amada's problem is that he keeps, it's just too hard to apply something that's so nebulous that doesn't actually, if you could tell me more in specific terms, maybe I can make it work. But faith itself in the Dhamma is so nebulous, and it's very much a part of the present moment. So instead, it's like this uplift of being inspired and inspired to stay with whatever is arising and be with whatever's arising and learn to feel into your own difficulties that you're having or the moment. So you're not attached to some idea and trying to wedge that idea into the moment. You're actually using the faith to uplift you to be able to stay in that moment and see the truth of it for itself. Do you see the difference? I can't actually hear you.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I hadn't really thought about it as something that's experiential or changing as much as it is like a solid belief. So
that's right.
Yeah, makes sense.
That's very good. Good.
Now Nina has her hand up online. So.
Hi, Nina. Hi, Tuari. Hi, everyone. So good to be here. I loved your question, and I was with Will and Evelyn, and you know, I've been a practitioner for probably 30 years or so, and still, it was still amazing to find out how people are inspired. It's different for everyone.
It is very different. That's the whole point of it.
Right. And I thought that was something that I relearned in having a discussion with others. And I loved what Will said. It was like he got to a point where he said, "This is the truth." And that, yeah, thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. That's it. That's part of what was part of that first question in the hall. That this is part of what that is, because no amount of belief. I mean, I wish it were just belief in something that's going to help me when I am in a mind that's just lost in torrent and I want to be still. That's not going to help you, no amount of belief. What's going to help you is this steady, persistent being with it until you come to understand how it is to be with a torrenting, you know, a mind that's like a monkey mind, being with that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good. Thank you.
And I think Deborah has a hand up.
Great. Thank you, Deborah.
She's trying to unmute.
Okay, thank you. So, you know, it comes back to this crossing the stream and how you do it, not standing still, not pushing forward. In our group, we got talking about that, and the crazy suggestion came that maybe we should do a Sangha field trip and find a really nice little river we can ford and do it as a, you know, like a practice action, because I've always seemed to me that sutta about crossing the flood is so close to the actual experience of when you're out in the woods for how you ford a stream without falling in or getting wet.
Yeah, yeah, you almost need a little bit of a rapids there, you know. It's like, yeah, that's it.
Nice, Jennifer.
Yeah, that image that the Buddha gives, I use it a lot because it takes such a gentle understanding here that we can't push our way up on something. It doesn't work that way. And no matter how much you want your mind to be still, you cannot force it to be still. And no matter how much you want your mind to be still, if you don't do anything, it will never still. So there's something about softening into this and learning to understand what is causing the mind not to be still. And what is it? Can we soften and allow this lack of stillness to be okay so we can look at it more closely and sort of put our heart up on it? And that does take some kind of practice to be able to do that. Yeah, thank you.
So anybody in the room? Come on over here, hang on a sec. Mike's coming to a person in the room.
Okay.
Hi, Tuari. Hi, everyone. Question I have is, I'm experiencing a lot of very stillness to a point where I'm falling asleep a little bit, just having the head nod thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like I recognize it as applying the right effort to keep me from doing the nodding. Is that what what is required there, or, you know, paying, you know, I've tried opening my eyes and those sorts of things, but I'm wondering what thoughts you have about that.
Yeah, I think it's right. You just steady as she goes and don't get too caught up in it. You don't have to fix it. You're noticing that you are, this is a good way to talk about faith, because you could tumble into sleepiness. And there's nothing wrong with tumbling into sleepiness. We have to tumble sometimes into sleepiness to know what's going on. But there's also this kind of gentle recognition that I'm sleepy. If you don't do anything, we tumble into sleepiness. If we try to fight the sleepiness, we just have a miserable sit. So instead, you're trying to be kind with this sleepiness and kind of see, can you generate some interest in it and generate some, like, you soften and you want to generate some interest in it to see what exactly is this sleepiness. Because I think it's telling that you said that you're so calm that you are getting a little sleepy. Many people don't see the relationship between the sleepiness and calmness. And we're balancing this calmness with mindfulness. So you do need some interest. Mindfulness is that interest, and the opening your eyes or standing up is part of generating interest or generating energy in the moment. But you can, if you don't want to open the eyes or you don't want to stand up, you can just generate interest. Usually in your anchor, you find some little nuances about the anchor that you can look at. Or I would open my eyes and begin to notice shapes and colors and light contrast. And you don't have to look around. You just, right where your eyes open up, you look at the shapes. I'd look for lines, look for triangles, all kinds of things, just to generate some interest and stay steady in the moment.
So it's not like getting entangled in what you're trying to be interested in, but more sort of getting your mind to have a little bit of energy versus completely
right.
gone. Yeah. Okay.
And not getting entangled in the sleepiness and not getting entangled in trying to make the sleepiness go away. You're actually, I guess you could say you're in the same moment, steady moment, same calmness, opening your eyes to generate maybe seeing, and you're just, what are you seeing? Shapes, lines, circles. Or if you're on the breath, you just begin to notice, okay, what does it feel like just to have the out breaths? What does it feel like just to feel the in breath? What does it feel like to feel the in breath and out breath? And then they always talk about this gap between the in breath and the out breath, and I would look for it.
Yeah.
Can I see it? But the idea is to do this without pushing towards something and without like doing nothing. And okay. At the same time, there's like this developing of the mind. That's all it is. And it's just trusting in that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're okay. Welcome.
So Jen?
Yeah.
She has her hand up. Digital world.
Hi.
Hi,
I just want to say thank you for that question. I actually sometimes get a little sleepy and I have all these visuals that are happening in my mind and I'm like trying to kind of, you know, play with that. So I really appreciate the person who asked that question. I guess it's interesting because when we talk about this faith, I'm thinking my immediate thought of like, you know, how do I have, I guess faith in my practice. And the way that I was thinking about it was like, I have this practice And then I see the benefits of it in the rest of my life, the way that my relationships are and how that works. And even though it seems sometimes that the practice is a disaster, it can feel like that I feel the benefits everywhere. So I know that it's valuable. And that's where where I was thinking of my faith. But it's interesting because how you were talking to the person before, the person in the room, is you were talking about faith as far as with your practice and in your practice and having faith in that part. And that was like, oh, I didn't think about it that way. I just thought about it like as that kind of broad, I know this is working and I'm not really sure how it's working, but I feel that it has an impact in other areas of my life.
Yeah. And I think if you see benefits, then you begin to see a correlation between what you're doing. Like for a long time, because I had so much anxiety, I didn't see any benefit to practice. I just loved the Buddha and I loved what he stood for. I loved everything about the Buddha and the Dhamma. I loved reading it. And so even though I just could not see how the meditation was going to ever turn this angry person that had all this anxiety into any kind of peaceful person, I couldn't see that. But I had this faith in the something about the wisdom of the Dhamma itself. And I just kept practicing. This, it's kind of like you're walking on a long path and you don't know what that path looks like as you're walking step by step by step by step. But if you turn around and look at it, then you can see. So when I started turning around and looking at where I had come from, then it's sort of like what you're saying. You can begin to see how the path is actually developing itself. But you can't necessarily see it correlation. If I sit, I'm going to be a better person today. It doesn't really correlate like that. It's this really long, gradual process that's happening, and so your faith can be both in the actual practice, so you stay steady even if you're having difficulties, and the faith can be in this larger connection to the persistence of continuing to practice even if you don't know how it's showing up. And then oftentimes what you're making a distinction is, when I used to go listen to Rodney in the early days, I had bright faith, just faith in whatever Rodney was saying, because I was so inspired by his Dhamma talks. And so I just kept wanting to hear his Dhamma talks. And that listening to his Dhamma talks, I would just keep trying, even though I had anxiety. I just keep being with it because I was inspired by him. But that lasts only so long. And at some point, you turn towards your own practice and begin to see that, no, wait a minute. I know Rodney can be inspiring, but I kind of like this for myself. I kind of like it for what I'm doing. I would just make up my own little ways of being with the practice. Like just anything that would keep me interested in it, you know, and I would make things up and I begin to verify my own faith came from being verified. Like you're saying, you can see it showing up in your life. And now that I've been practicing for 30 years, basically, or more, yeah, my faith is so abiding. It shows up all the time. There's never going to come a time when something's going to be so difficult, I'm not going to think to practice with it. That just isn't going to happen. So that kind of abiding faith begins to happen as you go along. And you've seen so many things come into fruition. You've seen what the practice can do, sort of like you're saying, you've seen the benefits. Then your faith gets much more abiding. I think that's the difference between long-term practitioners and people that are new to the practice. The longer you've been in the practice and the more abiding you are with your faith, the less you care what kind of sit you have. You kind of like, you know, thinking sit, samadhi sit, it's still a sit. It doesn't really matter. And I'm less anxious or worried about what kind of sit I have. You see? Good. Well, are we done? Is there anybody in the hall?
There is a person in the hall.
Hi, Twitter. Thanks again for the really great Dhamma talk and also letting us discuss. So I have a question. I think it's really similar to the previous person. I kind of see meditation as one of these things that's not very like, it's maybe similar to running in the sense that you kind of, it's not really like, it doesn't hit you with a dopamine rush immediately. It's like you really feel the effects after the meditation, like kind of with the run, you really feel it after. So I don't know if there's like, I don't know, a way people kind of really try to get into meditation or really like, you know, like a pre-meditation routine or something. Because it's not like something you kind of, like, for example, when you're in like a fight or flight mode or you're, you know, you're like really anxious, you don't really, meditation doesn't really come to your mind immediately. It's like you have to first settle into it. And then I also kind of noticed, this is maybe a second part of the question, is that I went to a retreat with Ronnie actually just last, anyways, a few weeks ago, right? It was the one that was online, his last one. It was the first time I really felt that I could really feel things like more clearly. Like afterwards, I could just feel like whatever I was eating or the room around me was just much more clear. And I was just kind of more thinking about how to maybe like sort of replicate this sort of, I don't know, like sort of, what do you call it, like pattern in a normal sit. Like maybe that's not possible. I just have to go to another retreat. But I was thinking if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, two things. So it is like running in that... you really get the effects afterwards. You can't always, I mean, you don't always have a good run, but you can experience this kind of euphoria even in running. And, you know, you can get past the beginning resistance of running and you can move into a place where it actually you feel alive with the running. It's like weight training, and it is like that. It does have this capacity. You do have to be willing to just apply the technique, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to experience this kind of peacefulness in the middle of your meditations. You can still feel that. It's just you can't guarantee it, and you can't make it happen. You sort of have to take your chances on when it shows up and when it doesn't. But it's like the hen that's developing their eggs. The meditation itself is developing your mind. And your mind is of the nature to free itself once it learns how to do it. And so you are cultivating this gradual path to help it learn how to free its own self. The sits... like that, I know what you're talking about with Rodney. I've already sat in so many I've sat with so many day-longs and weekend and just sitting on a weekly night, man, it's just mind-blowing some of the ways that Rodney could shape a room. But I want to encourage you to think of that as inspiration. Inspiration on the path. You can't reproduce that. You can't reproduce anything. But it's inspiration that tells you that no matter what kind of mind you think you have, that, that day long, you remember it and say, no, I have a mind that can be crystal clear also. So it's not just that you have to reproduce that moment. You have to learn to believe that your mind can do it, all right? So then the last point you were getting at, and I guess this will be the last thing, this idea of how to bring this into ordinary life. This is what I think the Buddha is talking about with the chicks. The point of our practice is to develop the mind. You don't develop the mind. The mind kind of develops itself. You are cultivating the practice. We cultivate practice. I can't tell you how my mind got so still. I can tell you what I did, and I can tell you what I've seen, and I can tell you how it gradually began to get stiller and stiller and stiller. And now it shows up in stillness in any kind of moment. It doesn't really matter. But that doesn't come because I knew what to do. It comes because in each moment, there is this moment where you can just ignore it, or you can begin to stay attentive to it. And gradually, over time, you become more and more and more attentive to what's happening. So what I think ultimately the Dhamma does for us is that we don't get reactive because we know why something's happening. You understand what's going on. We get reactive because we don't know what's going on. We don't understand, and we try to fix it. And then gradually with practice, you begin to say, oh, yeah, I know that. I know when I get like that. Yeah, I know what's going on. Yeah, I understand. Okay, I know. And I can tell when I'm angry. Nobody else can. They're all like, you're angry? I'm like, very angry. Like, really? You don't even look mad. I'm like, yeah, but I am. I can feel it. So there's a way in which I know it, but I understand it, so I don't have to apply it. Like I used to, I don't have to react to it. I don't have to get overwhelmed by it. So that's what we're doing. We're steadying our attention to begin to understand what's actually happening. That's what I think the Buddha means by developing the mind. It's because you can develop this mind and you will understand what's going on. So we're going to do this all year. Begin to see these transcendental links that help us actually develop the mind away from dukkha into this liberated possibility.
I think Tamira had an announcement or something. I couldn't see.
Oh, great. Do you have an announcement, Tamira?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love just a second for this.
Yeah,
so Judith and Adam and I are going to be offering another online sit. We're hoping to start it next week. It'll be a Monday morning metta. So this got started because alliteration is cool, and so is metta. So yeah, if anybody wants to start their work week with a half an hour of metta, it'll be Monday mornings at 7, online only. And when whoever's leading has time, we'll stick around for a little discussion, but we also know that that's a busy time of day. So just wanted to let folks know that that should be up on the website by next week. And if it's not, we'll start the week after.
So, thank you. Thank you. That's great. I love it that we have all these different sits, because we actually have to have a lot of them because we can't all meet at the same time. So it's great. All right. Thank you so much, you guys. I am so happy I can be here. And so I'll see you the next time. Next month, I'll be here also. I'll see you then. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.